This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of September the 16th, 2019. I'm Mason King. There's something really fascinating to me about residential real estate agents. The good ones become local celebrities, right? They're literally household names. Now, granted, it's their job to brand themselves and spread the word online and on yard signs, but a lot of us take serious notice of these folks who can help you make or save thousands of dollars on the most important financial transactions of your life. Now, I think this is one of the reasons why IBJ calls its annual ranking of brokers the All-Star Real Estate Agents List. Now, in 2016, we witnessed a changing of the guard. For 7 years, the Biff Ward team had ranked as the top home selling team in the Indianapolis area. And this is no great surprise, right? Biff Ward has been a real estate power player for decades. But in 2016, Dennis Nottingham and his Indy Home Pros team came from seemingly nowhere to score an upset with a whopping $173 million in sales over the previous 2 years. We always compile results over a two-year period when we do these rankings. The team closed 1,700 transactions, while Ward's team came in third with $126 million in sales over just 207 transactions. And just to save you from doing the math, Nottingham averaged a sales price of about $101,000, while Ward averaged transactions of $608,000. But now again, we're talking about teams, and Nottingham had assembled a huge team, much, much bigger than any of the others on the list, with 29 people selling homes or supporting the agents. And since 2016, Nottingham's group has stayed on top, most recently on 2019's list, with $316 million in sales. He has about 50 brokers on his team now and a support staff of 7. Now, technically, Indy Home Pro's team is a RE/MAX franchise owned by Nottingham, named RE/MAX Advanced Real Estate. What's really remarkable about Nottingham is that he is not a real estate lifer. Until 2006, he was a full-time Indianapolis police officer. Before that, he spent 4 years as a mechanic in the U.S. Navy right out of high school. So last week, I spoke to him about all these counterintuitive things, like taking up real estate almost on a whim, and then creating a giant franchise that focuses on relatively small transactions. And he also shares how his training as a police officer sometimes comes in handy when buying and selling homes. Here's our conversation. Dennis, thanks for making time for us today.
Sure, thanks for having me.
I know that as we speak, there are probably several transactions closing.
Yes, well, a lot of them, you know, we're at the beginning of the month now, so typically at the end of the month where a lot of the transactions close. But yes, we do tend to have closings daily.
Now, I hope you don't mind me being a little melodramatic, but I want to start in 2001.
Okay.
Where you're 25 years old, about.
That sounds about right.
Okay.
Yeah.
You've been an Indianapolis police officer for a couple of years after you spent 4 years in the Navy. And forgive me for not knowing like the exact details, but I think there are at least two significant things that happened in 2001. And the first one is you're awarded the Medal of Valor from the Indianapolis Police Department.
Yes.
Can you tell us the circumstances for that?
Okay. I was on just a routine patrol, and I had some two kids that had come up to me and said that a gentleman had pulled a gun on them and was threatening them. So it was actually probably the 200 block of South Warman Alley East, and there was a tavern there. I think it was called the Rosemont Tavern. So I went over to try to locate that gentleman, and when I had arrived, the guy had was in the alley and he had an AK-47, so he pops out of a garage. I immediately, you know, was taking cover. I'm trying to get behind the car. I do order the guy to drop the weapon, and ultimately, fortunately, he did. I was awarded the Medal of Valor for that incident. The two boys were safe. I was able to stop the gentleman and, you know, detain him and make the arrest.
What does the Medal of Valor recognize?
It's kind of a life-saving effort, being able to defuse the situation. I don't know. I'm kind of a modest person. You know, I think I deserved it? I don't know. I just felt like I was doing my job.
So then the other significant event, at least in hindsight, is I think that you decided to start selling real estate.
Yes.
In your spare time. In your company's spare time.
Yeah, in my spare time. That is correct. I was working middle shift at the time, and we got a radio call about a drug dealer in the neighborhood. You know, he's driving a Mercedes or something. And we got there, and we're talking to the gentleman. The gentleman's name's Nick. Well, he had a crew of workers that were rehabbing a house. And Nick says, well, no, I'm not a drug dealer. You know, I buy houses. I'm improving your neighborhoods, because I worked on the west side. You know, this was just south of Michigan Avenue. He had said, I buy these houses and we fix them up and then we lease them out. I said, well, you know, that's interesting. And I've always been interested in that side of the business. My grandpa, you know, he always had properties he would rehab and sell on land contract up in Hartford City. I talked to Nick about it, and he goes, well, you know, I hold seminars and all this stuff. And I said, well, you know, I don't think I'm really interested in a seminar or anything, but that's interesting. You know, do you mind if I take your phone number and maybe just call you sometime, you know, talk about it? And so a buddy of mine, Chris, on the police department, we were, you know, after that run, we were kind of talking about it. We both said, hey, we should start getting into doing real estate. You know, we're not making a whole lot of money here. We need, you know, we're sitting in parking lots, working security, moonlighting at night. Long story short, Chris's wife was pregnant with their first child. I was single. And Chris said, well, you know, somebody needs to get their real estate license. I said, well, I don't know if I'm getting my license, but I'd like to go to school just to learn more about real estate. And so I signed up for the classes. The instructor's talking about, you know, as being a realtor, the commissions you can earn and all this good stuff. And I had no idea. None. Zero. I'm really here in this class just to learn more about real estate itself. I mean, I'm a researcher by nature, and that was just one of the things that I was going to research and learn more about. But then my wheels started turning. I'm thinking, okay, so if I can sell 5 or 6 houses a year to police officers, they'll be my specialty, my clients. That would be way more money than working at a bar or moonlighting somewhere else for $20 an hour. So I decide to go and actually take the state exam, get my license. Land with a well-known company. I lived on the south side. They were out of Greenwood. So I called Nick back and I said, hey, I have my license now and I'm your new agent. He goes, you find me houses, I'll buy the houses. So I immediately started sending him houses. And foreclosures, the REOs, you know, those are the things that, you know, he was looking for, stuff that needed distressed properties that needed repair. That's kind of how it started. We established a really great relationship. He was buying 5, 6, 7 houses a month from me.
Wow.
I mean, that was back in the big rehab refinance days. I credit him for a lot of things, for getting me kind of a jump start in the business. He knew I was brand new, but he gave me that opportunity to help him. And I learned so much just by helping him.
So you're just repping this buyer.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm also helping other police officers and everything buy and sell properties. I just learned early on I liked that aspect. I liked the foreclosures. I liked the distressed properties and helping investors.
So you were doing that during the day and being a police officer at night.
Right.
How much sleeping did you do?
Not much. The thing that attracts me to real estate is it's the opportunities are endless. It's based on me, right? Like, I control it. That's what when I recruit an agent, I say, listen, I can gauge your personality. I can gauge the way you're going to engage with people, consumers, but your work ethic is you. I can't force you to get up off the couch and go to work today.
Was there something that you could transfer from being a police officer to being a broker?
Well, I think the ability to read people, you want to mirror your client. If a client is very calm, you don't want to be the fast talker. So they feel comfortable and confident in your abilities. And so I think my abilities to read people, maybe being a little confident. If I sat down with you, you're going to want to feel confident in what I'm telling you. Being a police officer, that helped me with those discussions. And sometimes you got to be a little bit gruff with people. You know, hey, your house smells like cats and it needs to be removed. Where some agents, they're scared to talk about that. And I think being a police officer and having conversations with people that maybe are less comfortable, and I was able to do those. And it's not to make a person feel bad about it, but just give them hints and helpful hints where a lot of agents may not be able to convey that confidently.
That kind of makes sense, though. I mean, yeah, because there are conflicts in relationships between between a broker and a customer. And I mean, you have specifically been trained in, for example, like de-escalation, but also being a clear communicator in a tough situation. So you do that for 5 years or so, at least up until about 2006, where you're a police officer at night and you're selling real estate.
Correct.
The day.
Yes.
And then what convinced you to, I assume, do this full time?
Basically, it was the birth of my oldest daughter. I had to give up something to spend time with her. You know, it was a hard decision for me. I mean, being a police officer is what I always wanted to be. I don't think anyone grows up and says they want to be a realtor or a real estate broker.
Now, did you decide at that point to immediately to buy a franchise from,
no.
from RE/MAX? So no, what no, were no, your no. plans at the beginning?
To be honest, I was anti-franchise for a long time. I was independent, just went as Advanced Realty. And it was probably 08, 09-ish. RE/MAX kind of planted the seed with me, just in general conversation over coffee.
And they were doing that
right.
when the housing market was collapsing.
Right.
How did they do that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the truth of it is I was doing really well when other agents were not. And it was because I was focusing on foreclosures.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot
and
of sense.
And that's important for me. So I've always tried to stay ahead of the competition, stay ahead of the game, and try to foresee where the market is going. And, you know, knock on wood, I've been lucky and been able to do that. So,
did you see the recession coming in the housing bubble?
Well, not necessarily the recession. Well, yeah, I mean, it's the writing was on the wall. Anybody walked in and raised their right hand could get a loan. So it was only a matter of time before those were all going to go into default. But my thing was, coming out of that, I knew that the REOs weren't going to be... This couldn't go on forever.
When you say REO,
foreclosures, distressed properties. So real estate owned is a term for properties that have been in foreclosure.
So they planted the seed in 2008, 2009.
So basically they said for the longest time, the buy sides of the transactions weren't appealing to me. So I was real strong just on the listing side. I didn't focus a lot on the buy side of the transaction. So I was so listing heavy, you know, we'd have 200-300 listings at a time.
When you say you're listing heavy, that means you're representing the seller.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And a majority, I would say 98% of those were foreclosures. And so RE/MAX planted the seed and said, well, why is it that you're not capturing the buy sides of these transactions? And I said, well, honestly, I just don't have the agents that could do it. And they said, well, if you franchise, you might be able to track those agents who want to work for and work those deals. And so that was kind of like put in the back of my head over a conversation, and it stewed, and I thought about it more and more. And then in 2010, ultimately, I did decide to franchise and start attracting those agents. And that's you know, ultimately when we started to really ramp up mm-hmm. and grow the team.
And did you name it actually at that time, Indy Home Pros Team?
We did not. We were Advanced Realty Team. I think 2012-ish is probably when we rebranded as the Indy Home Pros Team.
I don't want to sound insulting at all for
sure.
pointing this out, but you didn't go to college.
I did not.
You don't have a business degree.
I do not.
But it sounds like you had a mind for business. How did you learn to take on these management responsibilities? It was a bit of a learning curve, I would assume.
Sure. You know, and I always tell everybody, it doesn't take a piece of paper, it doesn't take a degree, and it doesn't take an education to be successful. I've always been common sense smart. First one to say, I'm not a huge book smart person. That just wasn't appealing to me. You know, I went from a mechanic in the Navy, which I worked on gas turbine engines, to a police officer, to real estate. Those other jobs for me just weren't satisfying for me. You know, that's what I like about real estate is ultimately up to me, and my successes is how much work I put into that. But I can remember when I started, for me it was learning. I started, my bookkeeping was literally a notebook. You know, I jotted down, and then ultimately I learned QuickBooks and how to do profit and loss statements, balance sheets, all that good stuff all on my own.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Hey, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
The IBJ podcast is sponsored by Krieg DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Krieg DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Krieg DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.kriegdevault.com.
Okay, welcome back to the podcast. So you hit a milestone, at least from the IBJ's perspective, in 2015. Indy Home Pros Team sold $172 million in homes over the two-year period that we were tracking.
Mm-hmm.
That's 1,690 transactions. You had 32 people on your team. And with that, you started a four-year run as being the top-selling team in the Central Indiana area. That, even at that point, was a very, very big team. You don't see teams that are
sure.
maintained. And even now, I think you have, I think you said you had 50 brokers, seven people on the support staff. if you take a look at the other teams on our list, I mean, you are double the size at least of the next. Why? Why do you want to maintain such a large team? I mean, nobody else, you know, seems to be trying to do that for whatever reason.
For me, it just evolved. As we continue to be successful, we're able to recruit a good agent. And not everyone's a good fit for our team, right? One of the common things I say when I'm recruiting an agent is, look, you got to check your ego at the door. I want people who are collaborative, who share, who involve themselves. Those are the agents we want. We don't want the standalone agent who pumps their chest. And so some of the smaller teams, that works for them. The way we're structured works for us.
And yeah, and you're very intentional about using the word team, and you mentioned collaboration. I mean, is that something that really you are asking specifically of your team, that I don't know what you've done before, but this working situation is going to be a bit different?
Absolutely. In this industry, you walk into an office and people are guarded, right? They don't want to share. What neighborhoods are you farming? You know, what are you doing differently? How are you advertising? How are you capturing these clients? That's out the door here. I mean, we're all sharing in that. We don't bring a lot of brand new agents in, but if we do, we don't like high level agents to come in. They don't seem to work well in the team environment. So what we do is, I like to bring the agents been in the business 3, 6, 9 months, needs more work, needs more guidance, needs more training. And so we take that agent and we build them into where they are a $4, 5, 6, 7, $10 million producer. They're more loyal to us. They appreciate the help. They actually engage, and you know, they've taken their business, built their business, and now they're loyal to us. And so they stay. If a $10 million producer comes in and says, "Hey Dennis, I want to join your team," I'm going to tell them, "Listen, you're not going to be a good fit here. You're already producing 10 million. It's you're going to come in here and feel that you just don't plug into how our culture is as a team."
Yeah, I was about ready to use the word culture, which is something that honestly I hate about business conversations nowadays. Yeah. But the word culture, I think it makes sense there, and that you have a specific kind of mindset and a specific kind of person.
Yes. I mean, and culture is important. To be innovative, to be, you know, engaged, and again, collaboration. I can't talk more about collaboration.
So you've got 50 brokers now. Mm-hmm. Is that enough? Or are you still thinking, oh, we need to be bigger?
That's enough, yes. Yeah, so, you know, 2019 is my year to focus on us, not on growth. Our focus this year has been really improving our systems and our efficiencies. That's one of the big things I work on. We've added a couple administrative folks to just help and simplify and make those systems more efficient for the agents.
Now, do you ever get out of the office now and actually get out and sell houses?
I do not.
Do you miss it?
I do. I'm an extroverted introvert, meaning I enjoy limited amounts of time with people. I worked so hard in the beginning that now I enjoy the management aspect of the business. I enjoy seeing the agents go from selling one or two houses to the next year selling 20. That for me is what I get my satisfaction. Sometimes I do miss the art of the sale, you know, the negotiation. But I have to put out so many fires now. I'm the glue. I keep the pieces of the puzzle, you know, everything together here.
So in our most recent list, which you guys were on the top of the top selling teams, the largest reported transaction was $1 million.
Yes.
But the average, if you look at all of them, it's almost 2,000 homes, was 158,000.
That sounds about right.
Uh-huh. Which is pretty significantly below what the other top teams are doing.
Sure.
So, you know, if you just wanted to cut off like the bottom half of those houses, you guys could have a much higher average sale price and probably a little less work for you to do. Why don't you do that?
If you look back 7 or 8 years, my average sales price was 52,000. And I remember sitting at a closing table and another agent saying, "You're crazy for doing what you do." And I said, "You know what? That's fine, but I sold 1,000 of them." There are more average people out there, people who are buying the 150. And I think last year, or really in 2018, our average sales price was 182,000. So we're getting up there, but there are more average everyday people than wealthy people. And so for me, I want to help everybody. I have agents in every side of the town that's where they specialize. I have people that live in Westfield. I have people that live in Noblesville. I have people in Fishers. I have people in Greenwood. You know, I have agents in Mooresville and Plainfield. I don't want to focus just solely on the wealthy. And so that's who we are, and that's where we're going to stay. And I have that conversation with agents. There's a lot more competition in those price points. Those deals can be a lot more difficult. you know, they might do a lot more work on that $1.2 million house than, you know, selling several $180,000 houses. But I'm an averages guy, and you got a better chance at closing deals in those price ranges.
I hate to ask an indelicate question, but how do you get compensated in all this? Do you get like a cut of every house, or?
Yeah, as a team leader, you know, that's how. And obviously with every business, there's so much allotted to marketing. There's so much allotted to office expenses and all that. So that is how the compensation structure works.
Mm-hmm.
Is it's just based on the deal. If it was a deal that I generated, or if it was a self-generated deal for the agent, it varies, right? So if I generated the deal, then obviously more of that money would stay with the brokerage or the team.
Oh, okay. So you were still involved in individual transactions.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So that's a main part of what my job is to generate business for the agents, right? That's the benefit of being on a team, is the tools, resources, and the business that we're bringing to the table, instead of them being solely responsible for generating their own business.
So you're all of like 43 years old, right?
Correct.
What do you do next?
The funny thing is I do own a trucking company as well. That was started in 2016, and that's actually grown quite well. You know, my brother and I, we own that together. That's a new interest of mine, I guess. I know, mechanics, police work, real estate, trucking, it all goes together, right?
Yeah, I can see where the mechanics and the trucking go together. Yeah.
No, but it's, you know, for me, I don't sit. I try to stay busy. I have some rentals and still do stuff with real estate on my own. So I don't know where you go next, right? I think I want to go to the beach and drink pina coladas or something. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't see, you know, for me in the real estate company, I don't want to have 600 agents. That's not really my goal or my intentions. I want, with me, those 50, maybe 60 agents can run circles around those 600 agents. Because, you know, I could have an office of 400 agents that sell 3 or 4 houses a year, but that's just not what I want. We're a working office. You get up, you put your pants on today, and you go to work. I mean, that is what we do.
Well, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
My thanks again to Dennis Nottingham. You can see IBJ's rankings of the Indy area's top-selling real estate teams and solo brokers in the August 30th issue of IBJ, or right now if you like, at IBJ.com. And before you get on with the rest of your week, I want to draw your attention to a few stories in this week's issue. Speaking of real estate, Mickey Shuey takes a closer look at the big split at the heart of high-end developer Litz and Eaton. At least a dozen subcontractors and suppliers say they're owed more than $500,000, and work has stalled on more than $16 million in projects. Also in this week's issue, Susan Orr gets a handle on how companies in central Indiana are dealing with the expenses of tariffs in the trade war between the U.S. and China. And Sam Quinn gets us better acquainted with the first class of chefs to take residence at the Fisher's Test Kitchen, each focusing on a different street food. They'll use the test kitchen to learn the ropes and then launch their concepts. Again, you can read all about it in the copy of IBJ you have delivered to your home or office, or at IBJ.com. And remember, for full and unfettered access to all of IBJ's award-winning business content, just hit that subscribe button. Thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.